der Digital Insurance Podcast. Seit 2020 die Nummer 1 für Strategie und Innovation in der Versicherungswirtschaft. Und ich bin Jonas Pieler. Als Entscheidungsträger in der Versicherungsbranche hast du mit Personalengpässen und zyklischen Rückständen zu kämpfen. Scali Insurance Operations stellt seit 20 Jahren Experten für alle Versicherungssparten zur Verfügung. Schnell verfügbar und flexibel skalierbar. Jetzt ein Angebot einholen unter www.scali.insure. Today ist die Vertriebs-AI für die Versicherungsbranche. Today dokumentiert deine Beratung, coacht dich und spart dir 5 Stunden Zeit pro Woche. Besuche jetzt www.usetoday.io und teste mit dem Code Jonas Today 2 Monate kostenfrei.
If your local market doesn't inspire you as an insurer, where do you look? Some of the executives and directors I talk to look to Asia. And now, who better to ask about the latest InsurTech trends in Asia than the host of the Asia InsurTech podcast, Michael Voigt. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here. And I love the fact that you pronounce my name properly without even asking me. Maybe that's because you're German.
Well, I didn't even recognize how do other people pronounce it. What would have been wrong?
Some people say Whites. You said weights, which is what it is. It's like lifting weights. Yeah, I keep this around just to remind me.
Nice, man.
In case I forget.
So you guys, you're hosting the Asia InsurTech podcast. What are you guys talking about on your show?
It's a good question. We started it back in 2019. And the idea for me is that I think every topic should have a podcast. And when I met Teresa Blissing, also a German, she said to me, okay, let's do a show. And I would know so little about insurance at the time that I said, okay, let's call it the Insurance Tech Podcast. And she laughed at me really hard. And she was like, it's InsurTech, but you'll figure it out later. We started off talking mostly about like alternative forms of distribution and like digital transformation. That's really where we started. But now we're always talking about embedded and AI. Those are the two things that kind of drive most of the conversations, not just at the end of 2023, but deep into 2024. Does that make sense? I mean, is that what you're hearing as well?
So specifically Asia, right? You're talking about Asia in this specific moment.
Yeah. But here's the other thing. Should we define like what Asia is?
This is the thing. So that's what I was about to ask you. What does Asia include for you?
So when I think about Asia, and I should probably give you a little bit of background and tell you why I think about it this way. I've been living in Asia since February 20th, 1990. Yeah.
That's a long time.
34 years.
This had to sink in for a moment.
I saw that look on your face. Like, really? But the reason why I had to bring that up is because I've been dealing with APAC and Asia markets for, you know, 3 decades. And for me, it's always been as far, I want to get this direction right, east as New Zealand and as far west as India. And I'm going to say something slightly controversial, and I'm curious about your opinion on this too. I leave out China.
Because this I was wondering whether that would include China or not.
Yeah, so I leave out China because it's just such a large market on its own, and it's very, very domestic. In other words, they're just starting to create product over the last couple of years for the rest of the world to use. You know, companies like ZATech, even Ping An, right, has built businesses and tech stacks now they're trying to sell to the rest of the world. Unlike India, which has always been building stuff for the rest of the world, if that makes sense. So I include India in there, yeah?
This is like Spotify. The interesting thing is that once you're starting in a country that is too small to really hold your vision of a big product, you're thinking internationally from the very first moment, and you're always primed to go internationally, and you're always looking to work internationally. And in contrast to Germany, where we have a lot of sort of domestic solutions to problems that exist all around the world, but we have our own sort of take on this, which is somewhat annoying because we don't have the resources to build a solution as great as it could be worldwide. Specifically, when it comes to software, there's like a lot of software that can be bought in Germany, and sort of every software solution that exists can also have a purely German brand on it. But usually it's inferior to the rest because it lacks the resources to build something great.
Can I ask you this? Do you see similarities between the European market, and I'm talking about the EU, right? The European Union and Southeast Asia. And I'll tell you why. Indonesia is nothing like Vietnam. and Vietnam.
I have no idea
like
about
Malaysia.
These things. That's why we're talking.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not the same at all. But
In which ways?
Well, first of all, the languages are completely different. And right. The food's completely different. But it's more than that. Right. So I believe really strongly, and this comes from kind of a lifetime of travel, but I have this philosophy around culture. And I think it's deeply embedded into the food and into the language. Because the food in Germany is different from the food in Italy, not because Germans have different tastes, but because for centuries, that was just the stuff that was there to eat, if that makes sense.
Yeah, to be fair, sometimes when I look back at a week of noodles and pizza, I'm not sure, but I get your point.
But you know what I mean though, right? Like the reason why that food developed was partially cultural. And because of that, the way they look at businesses and the way they look at the way they build companies is also completely different. So if you're building like a SaaS solution or some kind of software solution, you better be very careful to develop it with this idea that if I want to sell it into Vietnam, as opposed to Indonesia, it's going to have to be different in some respects. And you're not going to know what those differences are unless you have boots on the ground in those countries and real experts there to tell you what they really need.
This is the same thing in Europe, definitely.
Right.
So you got to be, if you want to sell to France, you got to be there. Yeah. And if you want to sell Germany, probably like DACH, like Germany, France, or Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, similar. But I mean, there's a lot of people that would disagree.
The Swiss would probably definitely disagree.
but still, you got to have an understanding of the local market. So what you're saying is that Asia is very diverse. So how many countries are there in this definition? Is it like 10 or 20 or what?
Yeah, I would have to say. Because remember, we still haven't talked about Bangladesh. We haven't talked about Sri Lanka. There's India. And I'm going to miss some. So for those countries that I missed, please forgive me. But Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, I'm sure I'm missing some. Japan, which is, I mean, it's an island all of its own, right? So that's also very different, pun intended, by the way.
But this is also part of Asia because it's in its own right a large enough country to be. But I mean, it's not as big as China, obviously, but this is still part of Asia in your definition, right?
Has to be. I mean, Japan also is a very contained market, but slightly different than China, third largest economy in the world still, right? But 100-something million people. And population are not growing, but I think that's true all over the world, that the population, at least in developed countries, is just not growing anymore, right? People are having less than 2 kids each on average.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the geographic area of this Asia we're talking about today.
Right.
So what are these biggest players to watch? So Ping An doesn't count, right? Does it?
It does and it doesn't, right? So if you're talking about Hong Kong, which is this hybrid market, right? It's not really China, but it's
so
not
Hong Kong
really
is part
China.
Of Asia. So it's part of Asia.
I think so. And I think they would consider themselves so.
At least in our definition, right? So Absolutely. Everything Asia except China right now. Okay, got it. Hong Kong counts.
Yeah, and to the extent that there are companies in Hong Kong, like Ping An is there, right? Xiong'an is there. ZA Tech is there. I don't want to say that those are the biggest and most important companies because you also have companies like, you know, FWD, but all the main players that you'd know in Europe, I think are the same main players. So you have Chubb, AIA, MetLife is a big player. And then you have all the big Japanese ones. Dai-ichi Life is gigantic, right? Nihon Seimei, so Japan Life, I think that's how you translate it. All these companies are gigantic and they're all having an impact as well.
But they're just like in Europe, there are established companies that are large and then they're dominant in their space and then they exist for a long time, right? There's nothing crazy new.
I mean, Dakadu has a huge market in Asia that they're working with. I don't want to talk about the Care Voice because again, built in China, but built for the rest of the world by a French guy. And I mean, I can go down the list. There are tons and tons of new companies here that are being built. Activo Labs, I mean, I could just go through a whole list of people that we've actually had on the show. Igloo is a big one. Who's the other one that does the embedded insurance? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Anyways.
Yeah.
But so in Germany, we have the issue that we have this distribution. That's not a problem, but we have this very fixed distribution where the vast majority of insurance sales is happening through brokers and they are sort of controlling the market and they have the end customer relationship.
Yep.
And this is preventing newcomers and direct-to-consumer companies from gaining large market share sort of quickly. Is this similar to Asia or how do you see that?
So Let me ask you a question in reverse. So what's the insurance penetration in Germany or in Europe at scale?
I don't know.
But it means like, high.
It is probably, I don't know, 90%
high, 90%. Like everybody you know has insurance, right? At some level.
Exactly.
And everybody kind of believes that the insurance that they have is actually going to come through when they need it, except in edge conditions where something weird happens and they have to argue about a claim.
Right.
In Asia, you have to understand like that acting or behaving in a developing market is very different than a developed market. Insurance is like the third financial services product. First, you have to save some money. Then you have to maybe have some assets. And then you want to, oh, wait, I have all these really cool assets. Shouldn't I get insurance for them?
Right. Because you got to protect against any, because if you don't have anything to lose,
what are you protecting?
Nothing. Right.
Yeah. And one of the guys that I recorded with from India actually said something to me really poignant. And that was that every Indian family is really just like one medical disaster away from poverty.
Okay, because yeah. They don't have any medical insurance.
They don't have enough for sure. They're very underinsured, even in India. And think about how hard it is to distribute insurance. You talked about in distributing insurance via agents. Just think about how hard it is to get an agent into a third tier or fourth tier city in India, in Indonesia, in Vietnam. It's just really hard, right?
Because there's no one.
It's not that there is no one. It's just that in those smaller cities, they're trying to solve other problems first.
Right.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So does that mean that direct-to-consumer brands have more chance to get customers? Or is this just as hard as it would be because they have these customers that have other issues to deal with?
So I'm going to give you a really unsatisfying answer. And the answer cool. is, the answer is, it's just as hard. And the reason why is, If you had to like give one adjective or one word to define like what insurance is really based on, what would that word be? I'll answer for you. Trust.
Thanks, man.
Trust.
Right.
Right? In other words, I sign a form digitally, I pay money to somebody, and immediately I get nothing in return. Nothing. Except a promise from that insurance company that they're going to take care of me when I ask them to and when I need it based on a certain set of criteria, right? So because I know my agent and she was introduced to me through a friend or whatever, right? I trust her.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at whether it's digital distribution, and we can talk about this in India and Indonesia, it doesn't matter where, right? Or physical distribution through an agent or a broker, how do I trust you since we've never interacted with each other, either digitally, right? Or physically. So that has to get built up too. And that could take a generation, right? Let me put you this way.
Yeah.
If you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I remember when, and this is how long I've been following sort of the digital space. I remember when Amazon first became available to buy books. Okay. What was that? Mid to late 90s. And I was living in
1998, wasn't
something
it?
Like that, yeah. So. And I was living in Japan at the time and I wanted to buy a book. And I'm like, let me try this Amazon thing. Kind of cool. I'm a tech geek anyway. So I was like, let me just try this. I called them to pay.
Why did you call them to pay?
Because I didn't want to put my credit card on the internet. What kind of insane person would do that? Particularly for a company that, you know, back then, you're probably too young to remember it, but they used to call it Amazon.bomb. I mean, there was questions every single day about whether that company was still going to survive. I mean, I think Bezos was pretty sure he had a strategy. But the point is that I didn't trust them. So when I think about it in that context, I think, again, how can somebody in a third tier or a fourth tier city in India, in Indonesia, in Vietnam, whose family has never had insurance, trust a new brand that's doing digital distribution or an old brand that their family or their friends has never interacted with? Like, that's really hard, right?
So how do companies deal with these kind of things? So they're still trying, right?
So how do they deal with them is they do small, very small pieces of insurance and they try to embed insurance, right? So here's the thing. Why embedded, I think, is so important in Asia from a distribution standpoint is because you don't know you're buying it necessarily, but it's there for you when you need it. And once, you know, we say a lot, at least on the recordings that I do, is that the claim is where the rubber hits the road, right?
That's correct.
So if you make a claim and you get paid, you're like, whoa, what is this insurance magic thing where I had a product, it broke, and then someone just like gave me money so I get another one, or they had someone come to my house in an hour and replace my phone. Where's the magic, right? So once that magic happens, then you can start distributing other products to them because now you understand what it is, right? It's like you're never going to order a pizza with pepperoni on it unless you've had just a margarita pizza first, because you have to know what a pizza is.
So there's in the majority of markets, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's no mandatory health insurance, right? Like we have in Germany.
That's a really good question. So there's mandatory auto insurance.
Okay.
Yeah.
No health insurance.
Not as far as I know.
Because there's like a whole conversation about this, because as a patient, you have less negotiation leverage when you're sick, because then you're going to do everything to get better again.
Yep.
But related to what you just said is that as a result, there's less experience with insurance, because here everyone has experience with insurance because they, I mean, to a degree where I would not even call this insurance, because they are used to walking to the doctor and just not paying for
it. Right.
So they might not even realize that there's insurance involved, because they have never signed up for insurance. It just happens. This is so this might be like even oversimplified. But anyways, there's with car insurance, so there must be some interaction with insurance and the value of insurance that it provides. And in Asia, you say this is not enough for them to sort of really the majority to trust insurance as they would do here.
Let me ask you this question again. Okay, just again, so I can set the context. Did your grandparents own a car?
Probably,
yeah. But how about your parents?
As well.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
We don't have a car. But we're getting one because we have three kids. But anyways,
right. But you understand the point, right? So if there's mandatory motor insurance, but a lot of people can't afford a car, like what's the point?
The thing, it doesn't make sense, right? So there's like a lot of people that don't have interaction with insurance because it's neither health insurance or car insurance.
Yeah, exactly. Because those are the, and remember, or asset insurance, right? But if I don't own anything worth insuring, and if I don't trust the company that's going to provide that insurance, and I've had no experience of tasting the claim, you can sell me anything you want. But if you embed insurance into my purchase of a pair of eyeglasses, and I drop my eyeglasses, and I take my eyeglasses back to the shop where I bought them, and they say, oh, we embedded insurance in your purchase of those eyeglasses, let us just fix them for you. You'll just be like, where's the magic? I don't understand. I thought I had to pay for them again.
That's interesting, because how about guarantee and product guarantees? Because here you have like, I don't know, 2 years of warranty on a product, and if it breaks and whatever the product was faulty, then you get it replaced. Do you have something similar? Because this product warranty is something similar to insurance with the same sort of value proposition. How about in Asia?
I mean, there are warranties for a bunch of different things. You also have to understand that there's a massive amount of what I call financial bifurcation.
What does that mean?
So the economies are really bifurcated. The people that are wealthy and educated are really wealthy and really educated. And in some cases, the people that aren't. So it's very binary, right? So like in Germany, or even in the United States, there's a like mandatory education, all sorts of stuff. There's mandatory education in most countries out here as well. But the point is that if you're not going to university, you're probably not owning a car. You're definitely not owning insurance. You don't have any interaction with these products. That's one of the reasons why penetration here remains low. This is just, it's really interesting if you're sitting in the middle of a developing economy, just to see how these things happen. Because all the things that you take for granted, or that Westerners take for granted in developed economies, haven't developed yet, right?
That's because this brings me to the point where I have an understanding is that embedded insurance, as you already pointed out several times, is way more important in these developing markets than it's here. Because here's the situation is we're having these embedded insurance conferences every now and then.
Right.
And we do podcasts, and when we talk, what's the state? And then there's a lot of times people say, I don't see the business case, or there are cases, but they're hard. And then you sort of have three different routes to take. You either look at these large distributors of goods and services, and then you just tie into those. But this is something that usually the big insurance companies already have done, will be doing, and this is sort of set. And there's only a limited number of partners you can partner with. And once these partners have their insurance partner, then it's done. And then the car companies, they have their own insurance companies because they're big enough to build their own insurance company.
Yep.
Or at least partner with a large global, national, international company. So this is all checked. Then you have the smaller ones. This is like an on-scale thing, and then you need processes for this. And this is also difficult, and you need the traction and everything. And then you have the third idea is to have sort of specific vertical brands where you have like pet insurance that you link to a pet shop sort of system. And then, so you tie these things together. But this is, there's like an ending number of options. And the use case isn't as big because you have product warranties, you have car insurance anyways. This is the reason why embedded insurance isn't as important here as it might be in Asia.
Yeah, it's very important here. And people are talking about it all the time. All the time. I wanted to make a point to you. GDP per capita in Singapore is approximately $83,000 as of 2022. Okay. Mm-hmm. GDP per capita in Germany, again, according to the fancy internet, is about $49,000. The GDP per capita in Indonesia is $4,700.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in the big cities, it's going to be very different, right? And it's hard for me to calculate exactly what that is. It could be three times higher, four times higher. But the point is that you're still dealing with populations that are developing into this. And it's developing really fast. Like, that's the other beauty of being in a country like Thailand, where I live, is that you get to watch the economy change its tenor in a way that's kind of exciting, right? It was like being in the United States in the 1920s, I guess. I don't know.
What about AI? So AI is the biggest thing here currently. Is embedded insurance bigger than AI in Asia?
Yeah, there's no real way to answer that question, but AI is very important. Super duper important, right? It's going to try to solve a whole bunch of different problems, particularly on the customer service side, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, if you can't get somebody out into the hinterlands, well, then you can have a very sophisticated chatbot actually interact with potential customers and existing customers using artificial intelligence, right? And also you can customize things and make things way more personalized using AI, both from an interactive standpoint, but also from a product development standpoint in ways that you could never have done before. Yeah.
So what are you saying is that because you have less penetration of actual physical connection, because the geography is bigger and there's like fewer, you got to travel further to talk to someone, more of the service side is done remotely, and remotely tends to be able to be automated using whatever sort of technology, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, everything that's happening out here is happening in a hybrid way because again, it's back to trust. Asians are very strong believers, whether it's in Japan, in Indonesia, in Vietnam, in the Philippines, or even in Singapore, right, where the GDP per capita is much higher, of just like face-to-face interactions. That's where they really get their trust from, right? So you have to add on this AI layer on top of it. I talk a lot on my show about how I always want to get the background of the person that I'm recording with. And the reason why is because people make visceral connections with other people, mm-hmm. not with companies. So I always want to make that connection between that person and the audience first and make that a compelling person. And I think it's the same thing where you're building product and selling product, right? I bought my insurance again from my agent because I trusted her. And because she's a compelling person, she made herself compelling. She literally brought her husband and her kids to every meeting that we've had.
How about avatars then? There's like a lot of development where you can have sort of AI avatars where you have speech input translated into text and then text into large language model. And then it goes back and it kind of does calculation in the background, interacts with systems, then formulates an answer. This answer is then inputted into a video generation software that sort of generates an avatar person and renders this person and then that talks to you. This answer doesn't make sense, right? Does it?
I'm insulted by avatars.
You are insulted by avatars.
I'm insulted,
because
you're presuming that I don't want to talk to a human. And it could be a generational thing. Like, I wonder if my daughter would be insulted by it. But here's the thing. At the end of the chain, if there's a real problem, the avatar is not going to solve it. You know who's going to solve it? Some guy or some gal. And I want to talk
why
to
doesn't the avatar? Why does the avatar doesn't solve it?
Because at some level, there are edge conditions to every problem. And if I really mm-hmm. want to have that problem solved, I want to have a human involved who's actually going to press the buttons at the end of the day and make a decision as to whether I'm going to get what I want or not get what I want. And I think, again, like I said at the beginning, humans make visceral connections to other humans. And unless it's a generational thing that I don't understand, I still think that people want to have their problem solved by somebody whose hand they can shake at the end of the day.
Physically shake or shake via video meeting?
Yeah, again, it's a metaphor, right? I'm not saying that they actually have to touch that person, but they want to know that that person's real. I don't want to deal with
the thing is
people.
there's this Turing test, right? Where you're talking to a machine, sure, and you don't know whether you're talking to machine stuff. So rendering is becoming extremely photorealistic.
Yep.
So look, the assumption could be
I use
that
AI
at some point.
I use AI every day in my job. I create photorealistic images. I use Midjourney. The thing you see behind me is not a real room. This was created on Midjourney. It looks great, yeah?
It does.
So I get that, right? But let me ask you this. Do you ever see the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie called Total Recall?
Probably, but I don't remember.
Oh, come on. So there was a scene where he's trying to figure out if somebody in the future is human or not human. And I forget why he was trying. I forget the whole scene, but what ended up happening was he was talking to this guy and the guy started sweating. And he was like, uh-oh, that's a real human.
It's just a different feeling. It's in the details, what you're saying.
But I mean, everything's on the margin, right? Isn't it?
Okay, so what do you need to also for avatars to work in custom service is we would need some more time to really get them right. So here's the thing.
But why do we want an avatar? Why don't we just have a person who has access to all this information in a way that's AI enhanced, so that I can still get all the things that I want as fast as I want, but I still get to talk to a human? Like, why do we want to have avatars?
So this is a highly philosophical discussion, because in the end, the reason why you say that we want to talk to humans because we trust humans to help us, be able to help us, because we have experience with this.
It's also more
so
fun.
The same thing is here. Yeah, here's the thing. The reason is, why do I have self-driving cars, steering wheels? And it doesn't make sense, right? It doesn't make sense to build a robot that can drive a self-driving car and then could have turned the steering wheel, because the steering wheel is the translation for us humans to drive a car. And a self-driving car doesn't need a steering wheel because, well, it has other ways to manipulate the wheels. And the same thing here is that if you trust a human, then the assumption could be that a human avatar is something you could trust as well. But this, the real answer, in my view, is that you can also trust a chat or any... Well, we're trusting this video chat software right now and this recording software.
But let me make a point. The company that keeps the human interaction is the company that's going to win, and I'll tell you why. It's way more fun that way. In the same way that, like, people love driving. Think about it. We used to use horses, right, to get around. And the guy that used to put the shoes on the horse, like, was just a day laborer and didn't make a ton of money. And the guy that ran the horse stable was, like, poor. But now, because so few people ride horses, now you have to be rich to have a horse. And the guy that puts the shoes on it probably drives a Ferrari.
Not sure about this one, but yeah.
In the United States, for sure. In the United States, it's so expensive to maintain a horse. I mean, particularly depending on where you live. But the same thing's going to happen, I think, in insurance companies. Because if customer service is super important to you, right, the fun part of customer service where somebody actually goes out of their way and does something special for you, goes off script, right, and just takes care of that thing for you, sure, you could program that in, and I understand Turing tests and all this other stuff, but the fun is going to get taken away. And the companies, and we saw this, just so you know, in sitting on a trading desk. I was one of the first teams that started building automated trading systems and algorithmic trading for stocks, okay, in Japan. I didn't write them, but we helped build some of the first algos to trade. But at the end of the day, the sell side trader still wanted to get on the phone and yell at me, even though he knew it was in an algorithm, because he wanted me to make the changes. And that algorithm is just as powerful. It was using artificial intelligence and machine learning to do backtesting on stock trading. And it could do things that a human couldn't do. But at the end of the day, they wanted a human on the other end of the line to just go, what happened? Why did that happen? And I think that that's true for customer service globally. And I think if insurance companies or any other financial services company take the human out of the loop, no matter how great the avatar is, the fun part is what creates the loyalty, not just the actual end result, right?
Okay, so if we want to have AI avatars, they need to be fun and they need to be trustworthy.
No,
which is fair, right? I mean, it's the question whether this can be built, but they should be both of those things at least, and they should be rendering.
So, all an AI enhanced avatar is trying to do is replace, please press 2 for Spanish, right? Please press 3 for this thing. Please press 4 if it's that thing. But you know what pressing 0 got you? A human, and most people press 0.
Right. Okay. So do we have the same cultural issue? So the cultural issue we have here in Germany is that we have this extremely quickly progressing technology.
Yep.
And the workforce need to keep up with both the technology, but also with the fact that they need to change how they work. New generations coming up. And specifically here, we had a large number of people born in the same year. And now these guys are all going into pension and then kind of stopping working. Do you have similar things where you have cultural changes?
I'm not sure I understand.
Which part?
I'm just not sure how to answer that question. We have cultural changes all the time, right? But I'm not sure how that's relevant to the rest of this conversation. So maybe I just missed what you said.
Here, insurance companies have the issue that their workforce needs to change to keep up with technology and all this stuff.
Because
the companies are not old, but they're established and, well, large organizations, and large organizations tend to change slowly. Do you have the same situation in Asia?
Okay, so it's a really good question. Here's the overriding problem. Is there a minimum wage in Germany?
There is.
What is it?
I don't know exactly.
But I mean, like, approximately.
Well, I think it's 12 euros or so.
12 euros an hour.
Right.
An hour. Okay. Just let me do a little bit of math. The minimum wage in Thailand is $10 euros a day. So one of the issues that AI is trying to address, again, in a developed market is, how do we replace humans? But in developing markets, human capital is very inexpensive in relative terms. So it's way easier to just throw like 10 more people at it than it is to develop these very sophisticated systems, right? It's just much easier to hire 10 more people.
Okay.
And put them
and
in
you
the
have
system.
Those people. They are available, right?
They're all available, yeah.
Because here they aren't.
Yeah.
Companies have a big issue hiring people because they can't find the one. And you have a supply-driven market where it's sort of the employee.
Right. So in other words, what you're saying is you're employing technology out of necessity, not because you want to fire people, but because you can't hire people. That's the reverse problem. In developing markets, there's no problem hiring people. There are plenty of people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Got it. And how about the changing transparency of the market? So here we have, with technology, markets get more transparent, and that's how you can sort of look at prices and look at the best offer and then choose the best offer. For companies that are focusing on volume and making their products as cheap as possible and streamline their processes, this is fine. But for premium companies that differentiate themselves via services and so forth, this is going to be difficult because they're more and more competing on price, especially in an insurance product where the product or the value is paying a bill which is sort of interchangeable. How do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of places in Asia where you can do price comparison. But again, you have to go back to one of the first parts of this conversation that we had, and that is penetration.
Yeah, right.
Right? It doesn't matter yet per se. So the people that are buying insurance want to do price comparison, but the first problem to solve is to get more people to buy more insurance. Then you have to start worrying about prices. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
It's a completely different problem. Sorry.
Does it actually make sense to look much into this market then? Of course, it always makes sense to look over your own borders and then see what's going on elsewhere. But if you have a market like Asia that is so different from a penetration perspective and a developing perspective, does it actually make sense to look much into this market? Even embedded insurance is hardly comparable.
So I'm going to say something again that's going to be really unsatisfying for you and also very controversial. Absolutely. If you're not trying to operate in Asia, you're just waiting for somebody else to create the avenue and the pipeline. And then you're going to come in and try to sell based on what? Remember, it could take you a generation to create trust. So the companies that are doing it now are doing a really good job. They're out there creating trust with their clients. And it's a long game, right?
Yeah, but you're talking about companies that want to provide services in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm talking about is we have the situation, you have sort of two sets of executives here. One set is looking at what they're doing right now and trying to make it better.
Yep.
And others are looking at their own company and the market and say, hey, we're already top of the game. How can we, our local market doesn't inspire us anymore.
Right.
We need to look elsewhere to see if we can get new ideas. But if I look into Asia and get ideas for a market that is vastly different, how much does it help?
Oh, I think it could be, I think it could help quite a bit because it's a great place also to test new products. Again, because the cost of testing those new products is way lower than it would be in Europe, let's say. And if you can innovate on the edges in Asia, which you have to, again, to increase distribution and to create trust, well, then you, all the stuff that you learn doing that in a market that's essentially greenfields but growing, you can take back then to your home country and say, we didn't even know this was a possible product, but now it is.
So, okay, so what you're saying is that you could test products in this market. Again, you would need to be able to have a presence there to sort of actually do this.
Or a partner.
But there's no direct application here because what you can have embedded insurance. And, well, I think it's hard to sort of take the ideas from there and apply them here. What you can say is, what you just did is, you can test stuff there. But then again, if it works in Asia, does it work in Europe? It makes sense to sort of test stuff in Europe somewhere else and then try to port it into Germany. But again, this is...
One of the things that is hard for humans to do is change their mindset, right? So if you're sitting in Germany or if you're sitting in Switzerland or if you're sitting in France and you're selling insurance in a system in which you've always been selling it, inertia takes over, right? And you just keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. There's no incentive to have a new idea. But I'll tell you this much. If they take you out, right, and they send you as an exec to Thailand, to Indonesia, to Malaysia, and you see all these new things happening, if nothing else happens to you, the way you perceive your home market could change completely. And then when you come home, instead of being in a system that just keeps turning out the same thing over and over again, because your mindset has changed into an innovative mindset, because it's the only way to survive in Asia, then when you come home, you'll just think, how come we never saw this market gap before? There's a huge opportunity for this product, and you wouldn't have seen it unless you were far away. Does that make sense?
Okay, so what you're saying is you got to do it and put yourself out there and really experience it firsthand.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily to be successful, but to sort of open your eyes to a new mindset. And this takes us back to what you said in the beginning, is that the culture is driven by food and language.
Yeah.
So even if you eat food over there and if you spend longer time over there, this opens your mind to new ideas. And if you come back, then you have probably, you can see stuff that you haven't been seeing for a long time.
Absolutely. Think about it this way. You're multilingual, yeah?
Probably.
Not probably, but you're multilingual, right? But you understand the point. So think about this. Let's say you only spoke German.
This is the thing.
I want you to think about it though. Let me just finish the thought because this is really important. It wouldn't mean you weren't smart. It wouldn't mean you weren't innovative. It wouldn't mean anything about your intelligence at all, actually. But what it would mean is that you weren't using that part of your brain that has to think in a different way to speak and understand a different language. And that alone gives you an edge. So if you just think about the experience of living in another country and then peering back on your own, think about how that would change you.
I agree with you. Having another language opens a new world because now you can read books in that other language. And I try to read books in English because if they're written by someone in the native English language,
yep,
because it takes out the interpretation by the translator.
Exactly.
And you get the real deal. And this is also important. When you live on site in a different country, you experience this country firsthand and you get the details that you wouldn't get otherwise if someone told you about it and everything. And then you can have a deeper understanding of things.
Yeah.
This may be the most profound idea here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think about the word in Japanese. So again, if you're in Japan, right? If you're a German in Japan, you ask somebody a question to do some business with you at the end of a long meeting. And that person just says, I'm trying to remember the word. Kento sasete kudasai. Please allow me to consider it. That's just like them saying no. But if your translator doesn't know that, they'll just translate to you. He just said, please let me consider it. So you leave the meeting thinking, well, we may have this deal. Whereas the Japanese guy's walking out going, no way. Do you understand?
Yeah.
That's why I make that point.
So my last question is, what do you see for the future? What do you see like the next big things, drivers? Is there anything else except embedded insurance AI that is coming in Asia?
So I think that the next big thing is not necessarily a technology. the next big thing is again, figuring out how to get distribution and how to get people to buy more insurance. Having small pieces of insurance, I think, over time, and just having people get claims. Because once you get a claim, you'll never go back. You're like, wait a second, that's free? Like, I get medical care for free. Then again, like you said, insurance doesn't feel like insurance anymore. Now it just feels like something you need for everything. And I think that's going to be the big difference.
Cool. Michael, thanks so much.
That was awesome.
Das war der Digital Insurance Podcast. Folge uns bei LinkedIn und hinterlasse uns eine Bewertung in deiner Podcast-App. Vielen Dank, dein Jonas.